But she didn't appear, either on the balcony or anywhere else. The afternoon passed. Darkness came, but no light appeared in Corrie's rooms. Abandoning all pretense at subtlety, I went up to the door and rang the bell. A maid answered. "Miss Van Damme?" "Yes, she lived there, but at the moment she was with her family in Alkmaar." "Alkmaar?" All my studied casualness left me. "But there's no one at the house in Alkmaar. The windows are all boarded up, and the garden's been let go, and—" Attracted by the sounds of distress, a white-haired lady appeared in the hall behind the maid. Gently she told me that Corrie's father was seriously ill, and that she had gone to take care of him. The family had moved from their house to an apartment in which there would be no stairs to climb. She gave me the address. For the next few days I suffered through my appointments in the tiresome town of Haarlem. How glad I now was that I had always spent a few minutes talking with Mr. Van Damme the evenings we were in his home. What could be more natural than for me to pay him a visit? And so a few nights later, I was standing outside the Van Damme apartment in Alkmaar, knocking on the door. Corrie opened it. The light behind her turned her hair to gold. "I've come to ask about your father," I said faintly. The pretext would not have fooled a 3-year-old child. But Corrie led me gravely back to her father's room. Mr. Van Damme was very ill. I could see it even from the doorway, but he seemed delighted to have a visitor. And so for an hour I sat in a chair beside his bed and told him about my trips behind the Iron Curtain and my hopes for the future, while Corrie came and went with bottles and trays, and I tried to keep my eyes from following her. She was wearing a white nurse's uniform and seemed to me even more heavenly and unattainable than she'd been in my dreams. And so began a curious, fumbling courtship. Twice a week I called on Mr. Van Damme. Twice a week Corrie and I held hushed, sick-room conversations at the front door. Oftener than that, I felt, would be intruding on this home, preoccupied with its problem. Between visits, I would often try to imagine myself proposing to Corrie, and it sounded so awful that I knew ahead of time it was no use. "Please marry me. I'll be gone much of the time, and I won't be able to give you an address where you can write to me, and weeks will go by when I can't get letters out to you, and though we'll be in missionary work, you'll never be able to talk about the places and people we're working with, and if one time I shouldn't come back, you'll probably never know what happened. Add to that no foreseeable income, a room over a tool shed for a home." Corrie was just too smart, as well as too pretty, to settle for a life like that. It was the 20th of October, during the time I was making these semi-weekly visits, that the letter came from the Hungarian consulate.